Hey, and welcome to the Clive Barker Podcast, episode 114, Hellraiser. Screw sleep! So the Clive Barker Podcast, if you're just joining us, is it's not by Clive Barker, it's about Clive Barker and his works. We're fans slash Clive Barker nerds who kind of like to dive deep into Clive Barker stuff. So sometimes we pick topics, sometimes we do interviews, and sometimes we just get caught up on the news, which is what this episode is today. Before we get started, I want to talk really quickly about Jordy Calendar. So Jordy Calendar sponsored our episode for today. Jordy is a very customizable calendar and organizer with icons, themes, and wallpapers and settings available to make your calendar look the way you want. So if you have an iPad or iPhone, Jordy can sync with the default iOS calendar, so you don't need to re-enter your calendar appointments. And if you don't have an iPhone, don't worry, Jordy is available on Android as well. So you can if you use Google Calendar, you can sync your Google Calendar events. Jordy also offers their own cloud services, Jordy Cloud, so you can keep your entries backed up and keep your calendar in sync if you have a smartphone and a tablet. Jordy has a unique feature we call event calendars, where you can follow calendars or events from a variety of topics. So one pretty cool one is Shock Till You Drop. You can subscribe to that horror blog. So you can add weather forecasts and find out if it's going to be raining or snowing in the coming days ahead. These and many more event calendars are available in Jordy, so to add them, simply tap on the calendar icon in the lower left toolbar on Jordy, and then tap Add Event Calendar, and then browse and search the directory and add any event calendar you're interested in. So we'd love you to give Jordy a try. Search for it now on the App Store or Google Play. It's spelled J-O-R-T-E. Please use our custom link, http://bit.ly/pinheadcalendar. So bit.ly/pinheadcalendar. So they gave us a cool custom link. So they know that you heard it from the Clive Barker podcast. And we thank Jordy Calendar for their support. This is episode 114, and we haven't caught up with the news in quite a while, so we've got a big build-up, and there's one major story that we want to talk about that probably will take up the bulk of this episode. Yeah, of course, the new Hellraiser movie. Yeah. Yes.
But it's Hellraiser Judgment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, we've got... Clive Barker and the Gothic Imagination. There's a postgraduate Clive Barker Studies program in Manchester Metropolitan University. So that's pretty cool. I wish my college had had that.
Yeah. I'd love to do something like that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. The Candyman 2 soundtrack. So this is an older story, Rob, that you had put... update was that the Candyman 2 soundtrack on vinyl was delayed until March. So yeah. I went on their website when we were putting together the notes for this episode to see if there was a new update, and
yeah.
It still says delayed until March.
Oh, okay.
And you can still pre-order it, and the black vinyl is sold out. But the colored ones you can still buy.
Okay.
So it came, is it in black and yellow?
Yeah, there's a yellow, and then there's like a silver or something. Or
okay, cool, cool.
They've always done a good job with their releases as far as like packaging.
Yeah, I love their custom painting covers too.
Yeah, me too. They did a really good one for Friday 13th Part 2 that I liked. I wish I could have gotten.
Yeah, I was kind of scrolling through them. when on their website. They look pretty awesome. So that is, what's the name of that company again?
One Way Static Records.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
And it's the Philip Glass score. I wonder if it's that that later edition that included music from both movies. I think that's the one, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
It wasn't too much new material he scored for the second one. It was pretty much the same. I mean, I think he rescored the main themes, but as far as new stuff, it was very limited.
It was just a little bit bigger. It felt like kind of like Hellraiser 2. Well, Hellraiser 2 was a lot bigger, I guess. But
and from what I've read, I mean, they were doing a vinyl and a cassette edition as well. I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is it's funny
still
that
don't
people
understand
still
the cassettes.
Yeah.
They still use them. I
know. I
guess
as soon as CDs came around, I was like, no thanks. I don't want any more of these cassettes. I mean,
it's also collectible, I guess, but it's not as collectible as, say, vinyl, where you can put a big vinyl on your wall, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, vinyl still has the really big artwork, which is awesome. Which is also, you know, a nice thing about LaserDisc.
Yeah.
But there's really no redeeming feature of cassettes. I mean, they wear out when you play them.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the artwork is really tiny, and it's usually album cover artwork, so the aspect ratio is all wrong. So they either crop it to make it fit, or they put big borders around it.
So I'd have to say that's just something you'd buy just to display and kind of remember.
Guess. And I guess sometimes there could be other incentives like
nostalgia.
Exclusive tracks or something that appear only in the cassette version. I don't know. Just an idea.
Could be, yeah.
I'm sort of in the generation that was right after record albums and right at the start of cassettes. And I don't have any nostalgia for those at all.
Mm-hmm.
I still have some because they're things that you can't really buy on CD, but I don't know. I don't care about cassettes. I mean, trying to find a specific song is horrible.
Well, anyway, it's cool that they're doing this as a collectible. So it's One Way Static Records, and it's the Candyman Farewell to the Flesh.
Yeah.
So it's just the second one. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, One Way Static Records, for my rant about cassettes. let's see. The Acme Theater in Hollywood. They're having Sci-Fi Fest on May 5th through the 29th.
Yeah.
And one of the one – is it a one-act play, right, is The Yattering and Jack?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's going to be amazing.
Yeah,
I
would love
I
to
see
that.
Mm-hmm. They did one before. What was the one they did a year before? I can't remember. Which turned out really good, so – hopefully.
Yeah, that was another one
was
based on
History
a
History of the Devil.
Oh,
are you talking about the same
no.
–
It was Hermione and the Moon, I think.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yes.
Yeah, or The Departed, whichever title you want to use.
And I remember reading it turned out very good, so hopefully expect good things from this one, too.
Yeah, that's one of those stories that should get collected in a Clive Barker collection.
Yeah.
I would love to see a Books of Blood Volume 7 that kind of puts all those stories together, those ones that have been kind of floating around in different anthologies for all these years.
Well, wasn't that what was supposed to be like The Black as the Devil's Rainbow at some point?
Yeah, that would have been great.
I missed that project. I wonder what's going on with that.
I don't know.
I'm sure it's probably still.
Yeah, we know that they they keep on trying to find plate homes for all of these stories. Let's see. Nightbreed. Oh, there's a Nightbreed screening at the Hudson Horror Show, in New York, Empire South Hills in Poughkeepsie. And that is Saturday, May 14th. And it's the 35mm screening of Nightbreed. I think we talked about this one on our last episode, didn't we? It was a while back.
It's going to be the theatrical, though.
Yeah,
right
because it's a 35mm print instead of a Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's a shame. Go ahead, Rob.
There was another screening that took place. This is a totally different one.
Oh, okay.
I think you're probably just using the same 35mm print. This is just at another
event. Oh, cool.
So they're kind of, I guess, doing a tour with it, maybe.
If that was anywhere near me, I would definitely go.
Oh, I like the lineup they have, too, with it.
I never got to see Nightbreed in the theater.
I didn't either.
I saw the rental copy. But I guess Nightbreed probably wasn't in the theater for very long either.
I've seen Lord of Illusions in the theater.
Yeah.
On a 35mm print when it came out.
I did. I saw it, I think, 3 times in the theater.
Wow. Yes, I did too.
And I've seen Hellraiser 1, 2, and 4 in the theater. The third one never made it to Portugal. So,
but you probably didn't see number 1 in its original run.
No, but I saw a celluloid print of it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Several times.
Yeah.
It became kind of a tradition because I used to go to this film festival called Fantas Porto. And it almost a tradition that every year when the festival was going on, there would be at least one night where they would do like a double bill of Hellraiser 1 and 2. So, yeah, I always went there every single year to watch
that. That's cool.
That's a great double bill.
Nightbreed's birthday was on February 16th, 2016.
Yeah.
So Nightbreed turned 26 years old.
Go Nightbreed.
Yeah.
I was only 7. I was 7 when that movie came out.
Oh.
It's one of the first horror films I saw. I was allowed to see.
I was 10 years older than you.
10 years That's older?
Awesome. Yeah.
See, I'm trying to think. It came out in what, 89?
90.
1990, yeah.
1990. I was 11. I wasn't 7.
Oh, okay.
I'm 36, so.
Oh, okay.
So I knew you were just a few years old.
Yeah, I'm 41.
I was 14, so that was still cool.
All I remember was seeing the first opening titles of it, and I was like, Mom, can I watch this? And she was like, yeah, sure. And I was just sucked in from there, so.
My parents wouldn't let me watch rated R movies. I saw it at a friend's house.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's usually sometimes that's what
I saw it on VHS. I think my brother told me something like, hey, you know, there's this movie from Clive Barker in the video store. And it's like, oh, let's rent it. And then it was like, hey, let's ask the guy if he'll sell us his VHS tape after a while. And it was like tremendously expensive, but we bought it anyway. So, yeah, that was cool.
I watched it not even knowing who Clive Barker was. I found out who Clive Barker was when I saw Lord of Illusions, really.
This was the first time I actually... The first movie that made me want to know about directors and writers and want to know... I guess want to break down movies and figure out, you know, who does what. And just that opening scene of Clive Barker explaining the story and about monsters. Mm-hmm. That opening introduction that he did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But before that, I didn't, you know, I just watched movies, but I didn't really think about who the creators were.
So that introduction was in the VHS version and the Laserdisc version,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But they took it away on when the DVD came out, which was kind of a shame.
They did, yeah. Didn't they put that back? I forgot. Did they put that back in the Blu-ray that came out?
I don't think so.
No.
They should have.
As an extra?
Yeah, that would have been nice.
That would have been nice, yeah.
I think it's up on YouTube. You can find it.
Yeah.
But not an actual release.
No. Yeah, when you go back and watch it now, it looks so dated in the way, like with Clive Barker's feathered hair and the way he, you know, he pauses and looks at a different camera before he talks. Yeah, yeah. And. Yeah, but it made a huge impact lighting, on me back then.
The lighting and the mist.
Yeah.
And the awesome busts that were in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen those in person. Mm-hmm. Actually, well, you probably did too, but I don't know if they got moved. They were like right in the waiting room when I was there the first time.
I don't think they were there when I visited.
Yeah, they probably got moved somewhere else, but I'm sure they were around somewhere, just not in that same place.
Yeah. Well, Clive Barker has new artwork available. He's been releasing some originals through his official store. And, yeah, so these new ones are very monstrous. You know, they're pen and ink, so they're pretty cool. So there's one of them called High Summer, which you talked about, Rob. You said it was your personal favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't post that in the blog because I just wanted people to go check out the image, the actual, you know, drawings, but it was one that really, you know, kind of touched me in a way that, you know, usually his art always does.
Mm-hmm.
A certain piece speaks to you.
And we'll have a show note so people can click on it and see which one we're talking about.
I was going to add to, speaking of his artwork, I forgot to do a blog post of it, but I did it on the Facebook page. It was his site is selling now posters. And I forgot to do a blog of that, so I'm just letting fans know.
That's good. I mean, it's nice to see things that aren't in the, you know, hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, this is very reasonably priced stuff. I mean, some of it is kind of high, but not all of it.
I've always just bought posters. I mean, I'd love to have original artwork. And I guess technically I do because he's drawn in some of my books, but...
Yeah, that's...
I'm really tempted to get the one that's called Blue Vision. That's a poster for an exhibit at the Best Cutler Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool painting. It's on the cover of one of those theater playbooks. And it's $25, so it's not too expensive.
Oh, wow, that is great. So, Hellraiser X Judgment. And I think the X is just a fan edition, but it is the 10th Hellraiser movie. Probably they don't... I would imagine that they're not going to want to draw attention to the fact that it's the 10th Hellraiser movie, and they probably will never put an X in there.
Yeah, I think Doug Bradley once mentioned something about the rise of the semicolon.
Yeah, or the colon. Yeah,
Hellraiser 4, it was just Hellraiser Bloodline, you know.
Yeah.
It always has a subtitle now. This one's Judgment, which is a title that comes from another project that Gary Tunnicliffe was trying to put together a couple of years ago on Kickstarter, I think.
Yeah.
And it looked pretty cool. I checked out the Kickstarter. I personally liked what he was trying to do with that film. I liked the trailer he came up with and the visual style.
So the interesting thing here is that there was sort of a gag order on this film, but Heather Langenkamp spilled the beans, which just came out of nowhere. I think nobody knew anything about that or was expecting that to happen or knew that she was involved in this or that this movie was even being made.
Yeah, she was giving an interview to that podcast that Rob, you made an article about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe, who knows, maybe it was planned, maybe it was unplanned. But the truth is that Gary J. Tunnicliffe, who wrote and is directing this movie, contacted Doug Bradley. I'm guessing if he wanted to see if he was interested in playing Pinhead, although for Revelations he wasn't there. So it's fair to think that Doug Bradley has kind of given up on the whole Hellraiser franchise, which has been pretty poorly treated in the last 15 years or so.
Yeah.
So he approached Doug Bradley and said, "Hey, I got the script for Hellraiser Judgment. Would you like to read it?" And he was like, "Sure." And then Gary Tunnicliffe approached him with a non-disclosure agreement, which I think it's kind of like common in the industry to sign those things. I mean, I know it's common in, for example, tech industry. People who work for like companies like Microsoft, they have to sign that stuff all the time.
But he did make it sound like there was specific language in here that was sort of aimed at him. Like, no talking out of turn at conventions.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Or talking in elevators. I guess Doug didn't like that very much, so he was like, "Yeah, I'm going to make myself liable for like $1 million just to read a damn script."
Yeah.
And I think Gary was a little hurt by that because he said in an interview, "Well, it was my damn script."
Yeah.
So I think Gary really wanted to have him back. I mean,
yeah.
But,
And Doug makes a good point, too. Doug Bradley made a good point, too. It's like, you know, he's been Pinhead for 20 some years. Yeah. And you can't trust me to read a script. And those non-disclosure agreements are normal, but at the same time, you know, he kind of lost his chance to get Doug Bradley by handing him that.
I'm curious who writes those things up.
I
don't think Gary would put that in there. I'm pretty sure that
have attorneys do it.
It sounds kind of like a little.
I had
it
one
does sound
for
like
my
a
assistant.
Personal shot. Somebody from Dimension, there's always Doug has been outspoken about Dimension Films, and I'm sure they've heard the things he said at conventions, and
of course,
probably they take a little shot, which is
unprofessional. Oh yeah, he's got T-shirts that say no remakes, please. It's a waste of good suffering that he sells at celluloid. Conventions. Yeah. Oh, it's a waste of good celluloid. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so there you go. I mean, yeah.
And what do you do? It's not going to be Pinhead. They've, you know, cast somebody else in the role already.
Yeah. So are you guys excited about this movie?
Kinda in a way, because I like Gary Tunnicliffe. I think I like him. I've liked his previous films. I've actually recently bought Within the Rock from Amazon.
Hmm.
I'm gonna give it a watch. Now, do I expect this to be? I have to keep my expectations in check here. I mean, the budget for this is, what was it? You said it was five figures, Jose. Something like 500.
I think so, right? I think that's what I read about it in the original.
They got a little bit more than Revelations. Revelations was only three figures.
Yeah. Well, but, Revelations is pretty much universally reviled.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There are some people that say, at least that one, you know, was an original Hellraiser script. And it's like, yeah, I'm sorry, that's not enough. That's not enough to make it a good movie.
You have to make a good movie. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, for Hellraiser, the visuals are important as well, and the good acting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, someone who can act. If they're not going to have a line, if they're going to be a Cenobite, at least have them stand in the background doing something that's interesting.
Yeah,
which was something that from the first few actors who played Chatterer and Butterball, you know, they had the experience of working in the theater, in mime theater, in mm-hmm. silent theater. So they had that presence on the stage. They knew how to keep the character interesting. And when we did the commentary track for Hellraiser, Deader, I mean, that when the Cenobites appear, you know, Pinhead is pretty much the only one that moves around and says stuff. But Surgeon and Chatterer 3...
Chatterer wasn't even chattering.
Right. And he's just standing there. He's just standing there stiff.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the visual effects were not bad, mm-hmm. especially since he probably did that for free. I think, didn't he say that he did the visual effects for free on that movie?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, since he got paid for writing the script.
I would...
You know, acting is really important. And in Hellraiser Revelations, like, there's people who are supposed to be father and son or mother and son. And they look kind of all the same age bracket, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
It's hard to believe that, you know, that's his mom or this guy's girl's dad. They're too young, so I don't know.
And there's, like, a romantic relationship between a brother and a sister. But she's not really he's not really the brother. And then you sort of get – there's the brother in the skin of the other – or the friend or whatever, or the kid in the – and you forget you don't care about the characters enough to try to keep up with who's who and what's going on, and you just don't care.
And that Revelation you're talking about, I don't remember any of that stuff. So
Right. Well, we watched it twice already now for the podcast.
Oh, okay.
So this will be number three.
You bought it twice.
Number three.
Right? Yeah, I rented it twice.
Yep. Oh, no.
So I'm gonna have to rent it again too.
But there's been a casting call in the Oklahoma Filmmakers page on Facebook on February 10th, I think. And that casting call was asking for specific people for this Hellraiser Judgment movie. And some of the Cenobites are going to be really strange sounding, because I can go into this really quick, but
yeah.
It was originally posted by Bloody Disgusting. And... So they're going to have, like, the jury. It's going to be, like, three girls with skin faces that pass on the verdicts onto the offending mortals. There's going to be more. There's going to be a whole team of, like, hellish creatures here that's going to be working to scare and you know, take the souls of the mortals who dare to open the box, I would say. And so there's going to be cleaners. There are going to be, like, older ladies that requires nudity. They're going to be the ones that lick people clean. They take away their clothes and stuff. There's going to be a surgeon, but it's not going to be, like, the surgeon from Hellseeker. It's going to be a surgeon that comes down from the ceiling. So they're asking for someone who is as skinny as possible, possibly not even owning some limbs, you know, an amputee maybe, that they can like swing down from the ceiling onto the table where the person is going to be. So he's going to be the guy who's going to do like surgeon stuff to the body. And then it's just weird because that's not what we've seen from Cenobites up to this point. That has nothing to do with what we've seen before.
Yeah.
You know, Cenobites are creatures who appear. They're servants of, you know, hell in the Hellbound Heart novella, or in the movie case, it's Leviathan. And they pretty much act on their own, and they have their tools, and they're surgeons from beyond. So,
and whatever they do to their victims is happens behind the scenes, presumably when they go back to hell.
Yeah, and this sounds more like, okay, so the Cenobites are outsourcing to minor demons now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's also sort of the, well, you're damned, so we're going to read you your list of sins, kind of like Hellraiser Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that aspect of Hellraiser Inferno in it. There's also a cop investigating murders in this Hellraiser Judgment, which is also really similar to Hellraiser Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an aspect I'm not too fond of. I will admit, don't like that the detective serial killer angle. Even though I'm sure he's not going down the Inferno route.
Did you guys see that meme that I think Steph Sculio made? And it was like Kermit the Frog drinking the tea, you know, but he had like pinhead needles or whatever, or pins, and he said, and it said something like, Doug Bradley's was not allowed to talk about. Yeah, or didn't get the part of Pinhead because he didn't talk. Wasn't allowed to talk about the script, and then they talk about the script a week later or something like that.
Oh yeah,
no, I didn't see that one. I have to look it up.
But that's none of my business.
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but so this casting call is pretty detailed, and then, do you guys think there's going to be a lot of like characters in this movie? Because it says here. In Hellraiser Judgment, detectives Sean and David Carter are on the case to find a gruesome serial killer terrorizing the city. Joining forces with Detective Christine Edgerton, they dig deeper into a spiraling maze of horror that may not be of this world.
Two of the detectives have the same last name?
I guess so. Sean and David Carter, and then they're going to join forces with a third detective, Christine Edgerton.
Must be related.
Yeah, like I'm not going to. You can't promote me until my brother gets promoted, too.
And so the final tagline in the synopsis is, could the judgment awaiting the killer's victims also be waiting for Sean? So, yeah.
And, my 100% chance of yes.
Yeah. So we already know the name of one of the people cast to be a cleaner. She's Diane Goldner. Apparently she was in Halloween 2. I'm going to guess the Rob Zombie Halloween 2. Mm-hmm. Feast 2 and The Collector. And she's going to be a terrifying, aging, naked woman that cleans bodies for punishment by licking them head to toe. That's
her punishment or their punishment?
Their punishment.
Their punishment, I guess.
Okay.
Maybe she has a tongue like a cat.
Yeah. That would get annoying after a while.
Yeah.
That was.
So, and Heather Langenkamp is not a star of the movie, right? She's like star power, and
yeah,
but she's really a bit part.
Yeah, she's the chain smoking landlady who snorts obscenities to the police,
which I love that because I want to hear.
Yeah, she could do the landlady thing now.
Yeah, screw sleep.
I guess, you know, you were asking what do you guys think about this, and Rob, you said your opinion, and I guess my opinion is, you know, I really respect Gary J. Tunnicliffe for what he's done ever since Hellraiser 3, you know,
three.
Or 4, I think. That was the one where he kind of took over the makeup for Doug and stuff, but it's like, I just don't know if this is going to be Hellraiser, or if it's just going to be yet another script that didn't get made because couldn't find funding, and then they rewrote it and they said, okay, now it's a Hellraiser movie.
Yeah.
And I know Gary J. Tunnicliffe said in an interview that no, this is not going to have anything to do with that other movie. This is like completely original. But it's like, it doesn't seem that way when you read back the Kickstarter for Judgment.
I actually think
Yeah, and then you read this one. It seems like there's a large overlap of storyline.
This jury doesn't sound like Cenobites. It's almost like the debtors, right? I mean, the debtors, they're not something that has anything to do with Hellraiser. They just got crammed together.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't see this as having much to do with the mythology established in the previous movies. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do. Because there's Pinhead's going to be in the movie. They already cast him. It's going to be a guy called Paul T. Taylor, I think. And Mike Regan, who's been playing Chatterer in all the other movies apart from Nicholas Vince, is going to reprise his role as Chatterer. So Chatterer's going to be in there too. So, it's going to be strange.
I'll give it a chance. I'm going to be fair and just give it a chance.
And some people were saying, oh, well, at least he kind of looks like Doug Bradley. And it's like, and I'm thinking, isn't that kind of more of an insult?
I guess, I don't even think that he looks like Doug Bradley at all.
Well, somebody had posted, had somehow superimposed, Pinhead makeup onto him.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really? I'd like to have seen that. I did not see that.
Yeah, it was like a Photoshop thing. Or maybe they did a morph, to morph the two together.
I guess.
I don't know.
I think Judgment, he came up with the Judgment idea. It was his way of doing a Hellraiser movie.
Without doing a Hellraiser, yeah.
Yeah, and then when that fell through, I guess this thing with Hellraiser, making another Hellraiser movie.
Yeah, so at least it's not quite as separated from Hellraiser, because it probably started out its life as a Hellraiser movie, and then he couldn't do it, so he made it into something different, and now he put it back again.
Yeah.
That's what I would imagine, because I think that probably his first priority is probably a Hellraiser movie anyway.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's going to be good.
No.
You know, the only thing
odds
that
it pretty much could fall flat on its face.
Yeah.
But I would like at least to see something, I'm hoping something that fits in the canon. We haven't had really anything that fits in the canon for so long. I just want to see something.
Well, and like, Jose, you have said that nobody sets out to make a bad movie, and I don't believe that Gary Tunnicliffe sets out to make a bad movie. I think he's going to try his best, but I don't think that the people above him, the producers and stuff, give a flying crap about whether this movie is good or not.
Or enough money to make a proper,
They care about meeting their deadline so that they can keep the franchise. And so it's probably, it's like November, right? Or that movie's got to be on the store shelves or whatever by November 2016.
It's probably going to open up in just one theater just to fulfill some contractual requirement.
Yeah.
I don't doubt any of that. But actually, I looked on the Internet Movie Database, the date for the release date's in 2017 sometime.
Is it really?
It's not this year.
But maybe they'll show it in a theater that time.
Yeah.
But I share some of, Rob's, view on this. It's like Gary Tunnicliffe has been in the franchise for so long. At this point, with Doug Bradley not being involved, he's pretty much the only thread that's still hanging on to, the glory days of the franchise, I guess.
Yeah.
So, he doesn't want it to die or be messed with by someone else.
And
I respect that.
And in the beginning, there was a confusion from people thinking, oh, is this the Clive Barker movie? And that's an absolute no. This is not even related at all to the talk that Clive Barker had with the Weinsteins about making a Hellraiser remake.
No, this is just because, the Weinsteins lost the rights to Halloween.
Yeah.
Last year.
They can't lose the rights to this.
Yeah.
They're hurting right now.
So
right.
What we don't know is if that project is dead or if they just didn't have enough time to get it started and they just had to churn out something really fast.
I just read a report, not anything related to the Hellraiser Clive Barker, but just about Dimension and how bad a shape they're in. They had to delay the new Amityville they were supposed to be released next month, but now it got delayed to January 2017.
What is that? A remake?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I've never really followed it.
I've seen Amityville Horror, the old one.
But this film is already gone through the dimension meat grinder, like a lot of their films do. It got edited down to a PG-13.
Oh,
they delayed it because they were afraid to go against Batman versus Superman, which I don't blame them. But I mean, chances are this movie is probably going to be a bomb.
That would be a completely different audience anyway than Batman.
January is a time when they just dump movies anyway. So
yeah,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. They don't. I mean, these guys are just. They need to stay away from the creative process, and if they want to be involved in movies, great. Give the people the money and just stay the hell out of the way, because all they do is just fuck things up.
Yeah,
right.
Well, and they get reinforced if they actually make money on it. People like us are going to watch this Hellraiser movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am going to watch it. That's true. Yeah. I mean, I haven't reached that point where I can. Say, you know what, I'm not going to watch it because I'm done with this. It's like there's always that nagging curiosity there. It's like, okay, well, I've seen the low of the low that this franchise can go. So it's like at some point it has to start bouncing back up.
And after Hellworld, I said I'm never going to watch another one again. But then, starting this podcast, I've kind of felt like, well, now it's my job
to give
these things a second look and talk about them more.
There's going to be more characters in this movie that were in the casting call, like a soccer boy, a Mormon, must speak German. There's going to be a butcher, a bouncer doorman type with his giant scythe in large heck-like movements. He slices meat from Watkins's back. So we're guessing he's a Cenobite-like creature.
Mm.
And it's just, I know that it would be nice to see something that fits into the mythology. But my personal opinion is this is not fitting into the mythology. I just find it hard. It depends on how well they're going to introduce this and how well they're going to represent this tableau on the screen. But it's like I find it hard because this is not as familiar to me.
They're not really going to call
from the Cenobites.
They're not really going to call the jury in the movie. I wouldn't think they would do that, would they? There's just names they just made up.
Well, it is called Judgment, so it could just be implied that they're a jury. You know, it's funny, though, because I think that if they just threw one little bone to the fans, like if it was set, if part of it was set in the labyrinth and you could see the Leviathan... Something small, some little small thing that they did like that, we would forgive it everything. Bad acting, we would forgive a bad script. If they just gave us something, it seems like the only rule that they have is you got to have Pinhead and you got to have the puzzle box.
Right.
Yeah. Everything else got thrown out the window after four.
Yeah.
It's a good point that you raised about if this was in hell, it may work better because in the comic books, there were characters like these, not particularly the jury, but there were characters who were like part of the hierarchy of hell.
Yeah.
In the labyrinth. I mean, you saw these in the old Marvel Epics comics. Some of them were like servants to the Cenobites and stuff like that.
And Pinhead was kind of in those comics more sparingly, and there were a lot of other characters that they developed.
Yeah, like I remember Balbereth was the librarian of hell, and then there was that guy that was super fat. I forgot his name.
Oh, yeah.
I
can't remember his name.
And the guy that ran the armory that was like a Vietnam vet.
Atkins.
Atkins.
The Atkins Cenobite. Okay, sure. I could see that being reflected in these characters that Gary Tunnicliffe is putting in the movie, but I don't know. It's if he put them in the context of hell, that might work better, but I don't think it's going to be like that. I think it's going to be like someone's going to open the box, and then these guys are all going to start appearing, and Pinhead's going to come in and say something that's going to be like seems very profound. And
it'll be a sermon.
He'll explain everything and why this is happening to that person. And then, these guys are going to play with his, anatomy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the movie. I'm betting, it's...
Yeah. And it's like, oh, you thought you were investigating these murders, but you were really investigating your own sins.
Right.
Something I like that voice, Ron. Yeah.
I hope we're wrong, but that's what I believe is going
to
be
like. Yeah. And even if it is bad, you know, we could always look forward to another Clive Barker, you know, comment like you made with the revelation.
Yeah, so well, that's kind of bittersweet.
Yeah.
I mean, when it gets to that point, it's pretty sad. And actually, yeah. I have a picture that Mark Miller or that Clive Barker drew on Mark Miller's copy of Hellraiser Revelations, where he drew glasses and like buck teeth on the pinhead.
I'd love to
with
see
a
that.
Silver
That's
Sharpie.
Awesome. So love to see that.
He texted that to me. He's like, "Look what Clive Barker just gave me."
That's great. That's great. On the other hand, I'm surprised that there's a copy of Revelations at Clive Barker's house.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised. But, yeah, that's a hilarious story, really.
Well, I think he watches every Hellraiser sequel. Yeah. Just like us, I think he needs to see what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that, especially it's his baby. And yeah. I bet he wishes every single day of his life that he hadn't had to give away the rights for like $1 million to make the first Hellraiser movie.
I thought it was $10,000.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, I think it wasn't, because the budget for Hellraiser was $1 million.
That was the movie budget, right?
Yeah, okay. And he thought I think he sold it before they even started filming, right? So he had no clue that there would ever be another Hellraiser. But as soon as they got halfway into filming, they were like, "We're on to something."
Yeah.
Yep. So let's see what comes out of this. I mean,
yeah.
We'll be sure to make a review when this comes out and try to be as honest and unbiased as possible. I just don't hold many high hopes for this because I consider this to be just another placeholder movie in the franchise.
Oh, yeah, it's most definitely a placeholder. I mean, they're not, you know, it's to keep the rights to the film. I'm hoping that you know, that with Gary behind the camera and with maybe
looking at it from his perspective, it's like
maybe he has a strong vision that he can bring to it.
Well, and he. If somebody asks you if you want to make a Hellraiser movie, you're going to say yes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Especially, I'm sure for him this is a big opportunity, and for everybody else involved, it's just a thing that needs to be done.
It's work.
Yeah.
So maybe glad to be working. Passion will come through.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some of these characters just sound like big stereotypes. Hodges, male, 50s. He's a rotund medical examiner, Hawaiian shirt wearing, basement working bureaucrat with information on Crystal Lanning's murder. And then it's Crystal Lanning, female, 21. She's a beautiful socialite. She wears a black designer micro cocktail dress, carries a Chanel purse, and barks into her bejeweled cell phone. And she has a little dog called Baby.
Yeah, there are a lot of...
Well, you know that she's only in there so she can get horribly murdered.
Yes. She's going to be annoying as possible.
Yeah.
She's going to speak with a very annoying voice. Her little lapdog is going to be very annoying. And then she's going to be chained and turned into, like, you know, strips of flesh.
And the dog is going to die off screen.
No, it'll be eating treats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, or maybe the dog will just be eating stuff off the ground.
You know, that just reminded me of that scene. I think it's that movie with Anthony Hopkins, Red Dragon, I think. Where is it Red Dragon or is it Hannibal?
That's Hannibal, that dog. Hannibal. That's Hannibal, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, where Anthony Hopkins' character mauls the face of the millionaire when he's on drugs. Or tells him to cut strips of
his face. Cut his face up.
And then Anthony Hopkins just feeding those to the dog.
After I saw Hannibal, I didn't want to see any more of those movies, so I never saw Red Dragon.
Oh, I loved Hannibal. I thought it's great.
Oh, and
it's
like
funny that I think it was Anthony Hopkins said recently that he kind of regretted a little bit doing. I think it was Hannibal. He regretted
I saw that same. I disagreed with that, but you know, that's his take on. I guess the.
I still like all three movies. Years.
It was too much for me. Like, I didn't. He, like, was it Ray Liotta's character that he cut the top of his head off and was screwing around with his brain and sitting there at the table? And
that's true. That was a little over the top.
Yeah, but,
that was
feeding him little pieces of his own brain.
It's in
that
the book,
right out
though,
of the book, though. Yeah, I mean,
I haven't read the books. I just is like, I don't know. I kind of liked Silence of the Lambs. But
it looked a little funny, yeah. The Ray Liotta scene, it looked a little funny.
It was a little comic booky.
It was. I don't know. I just don't like. I don't like people getting tortured.
Oh yeah, I don't like movies like Hostel. I mean, yeah. I've seen a little bit of Hostel 1, the Eli yeah. Roth movie, but
I won't
it's
watch.
Just not for me.
I won't watch Saw or Hostel or. I like monster movies. I don't like movies where people are sitting there helpless getting mutilated.
As I've gotten older, that's what I tend to go towards is monster movies.
Yeah.
You know, just stuff like, you know, like a Hostel and Last House on the Left, even the original ones. And
Yeah, I saw the original Last House on the Left, and it just kind of made me feel sick.
Yeah, it's not a happy movie, and watching some people get raped. And I was just before we started this podcast, I was watching Pray for Death, and it was a new unrated version of it. And some of the unrated footage they added it back in that had never been seen was a rape scene. And I was just like, well,
you're talking about that ninja movie?
Yeah. With Shokin Sugi?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I rented that a long time ago in the late 80s.
Yeah, but they just released it through Arrow Video.
Really?
It looks great, but I'm not in. Monster movies are the...
Yeah.
Those are the best. I guess the 90s, early 90s movies, to me, that was like my favorite time for horror movies. You know, with stuff like Wishmaster and Hellraiser 3 and...
Candyman.
Candyman. And then there was just a bunch of movies like that that came out in the early 90s that I just still love, and they work so well for me because maybe... A lot of them were still done with practical effects and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
even the first two, I like the out of that whole teenage, you know, craze of that Scream started. I actually liked the first two Scream films, and I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm-hmm.
Actually watched this recently, and
I really like even
good.
I like the first Nightmare on Elm Street and the first two Halloween movies too. I mean, that's not 90s, but
yeah, but those films are. None of those movies, they're monster movies too because nobody's getting tortured. I mean, I don't feel bad or real, like, sick watching them.
Yeah. Yeah, like, what was that, that Rob Zombie movie, House of a Thousand Corpses, where, like, Rainn Wilson, they've got him chained up on a cross and he cuts his hand off and, like, rubs it in his face.
Yeah, that was House of a Thousand Corpses, but that was more...
That made it turn a corner for me where it's like, all right, I don't like this movie anymore.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you look at actual Grindhouse old movies, some of them could be pretty gory and bloody and a little silly as well. But sometimes they would cross the lines of taste like by a mile and a half.
Yeah.
It's just the way it was. Like or also Italian movies like the Giallos.
Pieces.
Yeah. Giallo movies.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of like stabbing and knife cutting and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, and close up of somebody's eye when something's going to stab into it.
Mm.
Oh yeah, it's a Fluchy.
But it worked. Yeah. It worked. You know, those movies are still seen and they become cult movies for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think for me, it's not. You know, I'm not looking for something that makes me uncomfortable.
Right, right. You tend to look at fantasy. I guess this might be true. I don't want to generalize, but this might be true for Clive Barker fans to some degree or other, is that we like fantasy as kind of a place that you're transported to that makes you feel good, and it's more like a fantasy land.
Yeah.
There's some darkness here and there, but it's something that you can explore, and it's a new world that you can play in and wish you could live in, at least.
Yeah.
For example, like a Magicka for me.
Well, and even Hellraiser, it hints at some crazy world that, you know, that's not explained.
Or some, Weave World.
Yeah. Yeah, Weave World for sure.
Lord of Illusions.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Like, where did Nyx get his power from? How is he talking to fire? You know, there's so much there that wasn't explained. Who did he have to make his pact with to come back and promise to deliver more dead bodies and
extra dimensional entities maybe?
Yeah,
all Clive's films are really love stories. I was watching all of them have a love story arc to them.
Yeah, sometimes it's a really screwed up love story.
Yeah,
God, look at Imagica, the Godolphins and the.
Oh,
have you read Imagica already, Rob?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That is so complicated, that love story, too, because it's not just like a triangle, but you've got clones involved in it, too.
Yeah, clones.
It's not complicated enough. Let's put clones in there.
George Lucas copied that idea when he made Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So I wish that Gary Tunnicliffe would transport some of that, you know, experience that he has from working in movies in the 90s. And if he could just, like, emulate that in the next Hellraiser, I think it would really be interesting. And I hope that he does capture something a little more than... what was the name of the director of Revelation? Something Garcia?
Yeah.
Victor Garcia or something. Yeah.
Well, and another problem with Revelations was the script was adapted from a remake script that Gary Tunnicliffe had written.
Yeah. That's right. And
so
they
cut
out like 30 pages from the script. So, I mean.
Yeah, which explains why it had, you know, somebody swapping skins with somebody else to trick everybody and.
Because in that interview, he talked about how he really wanted to direct Revelations.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't let him do it.
And yeah, oh yeah, don't let him ruin the movie.
Yeah, he was very upset with how that turned out. He was very upset.
So hopefully, for a lot of people, it's probably going to be the first movie they're going to see directed by Gary Tunnicliffe. Maybe, you know, he'll do a good job in the directing. I mean, that is a big deal. The director can affect how a movie is... You know, the director's vision. So in this case, he both wrote and directed it. So let's see what comes out of this.
And yeah, that's true. Because the budget is not as important as who's directing it and the believability of the performances, too.
Like Clive Barker did Hellraiser on $1 million. And it's a classic. So
yeah.
I'm not saying that Gary J. Tunnicliffe is Clive Barker, though.
he's no U-Bowl either. So I can say that.
So. All right. That's good. So let's see.
I want to talk. Can we talk about this? This is some amazing concept art from the Midnight Meat Train.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They took out this character of
that's the one with the cage over his face.
I can't believe they cut this character out.
Jose and I actually saw prints of that laying around because they were getting ready to put it together for the.
Motion comic,
yeah, of that character.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. When we saw the premiere of Nightbreed in L.A., that was pretty cool.
But at the time, I didn't understand how can this character function with a cage over his face. But now, when we see this concept art, it's explained that the cage sort of folds back.
Yeah, I just think something like that should have been put in the movie because audiences they grab onto an image.
Yeah, and producers were really pushing on Midnight Meat Train to take the supernatural stuff out and just make it a slasher on a train.
And that really, the compromise in the end, I mean, I think it is okay, but I think it was just...
It could have been better if we had had the city grandfather like they had planned, and then, of course, the... what do you call that? The blob guy. I forget what his name was.
The butcher guy?
No, the Cthulhu monster sort of blob that was like the original father
from the story.
Yeah,
the first American.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, I think this would have been great. The grandfather, especially with the headgear, but it would have to be a monster in a different movie than Midnight Meat Train was, because that movie was so much of it was like. Brooke Shields and Bradley Cooper and, you know, just walking in subways and stuff.
And what you see
out of the blue in the last 5 minutes, just introducing this character would have felt like a waste, you know?
Well, but you do see the city fathers. They're just kind of slinking around in the darkness.
Yeah, but they don't look as cool as this one, as the grandfather.
No.
They're just like naked old people, like monstrous looking.
Yeah, I think they had sharp teeth.
I think so.
It's hard to tell. I mean, we'll be watching this movie again here in the next few months, but
yeah, the ending has kind of become a blur for me. But
I agree with you. Yes, that would have been Yeah, I agree. I see what your point about it being a waste, because it's like you see this character for 5 minutes and you're like, holy crap, who is this? I want to see more of this guy.
I think I still would have liked to have him in there.
Yeah, I think so too, because I think because Clive wanted to, they were wanted to make a series of movies out of this, I think. This was the start of a new franchise, I believe, is what I understood.
Yeah, yeah, if Lionsgate hadn't screwed it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, the old executive that was there that was one of the guys who loved this project, then he left, and they replaced him with another one who was like, all right, I'm just going to dump all the previous projects.
Oh, yeah. Was it theaters.
Yeah, and in favor of, what was it, Your Next or?
The Strangers.
The Strangers, that's it. Yeah, that was like a home invasion movie.
Which actually made a ton of money, so it was kind of like, damn, yeah, that sucks, you know.
Yeah.
More power to them.
Well, it probably made a ton of money because they were advertising it like crazy on TV at the time.
I've seen the movie. It's not very good.
I never saw it.
I watched it once.
Yeah. And
that was it. So.
After what they did to the Midnight Meat Train, I just wouldn't watch it. But I did see a lot of commercials for it.
So that's pretty cool concept art that came out.
Yeah.
Concept art, Constantine Sicarius. Yes, Constantine.
And was that in the Midnight Meat Train book, the hardcover that came out? I don't think I remember seeing this.
No. The Clive Barker painting of that character is in there, but not this concept art.
Yeah, I've got my brother made a custom shirt for me of this the painting.
Oh, that's cool.
Of this character.
And then also there's Midnight Meat Train artwork on display at the grand opening of the Telltale Heart Gallery and Tattoo Parlor in Burlington, Ontario, Canada. And there's another connection to Clive Barker here because it's Jovanka Vukovic, right? Is the who is set to direct Jacqueline S.
Yeah, it's her store.
Yeah,
so, that's pretty cool.
She just dope. Yeah, it's a tattoo parlor and art gallery.
Telltale Heart Gallery. Telltale Heart is my favorite Edgar Allan Poe story.
I'll talk to her one time on a podcast, right?
No. We talked. We tried, but they felt that it was too early to talk about.
I thought y'all did.
Yeah,
Jacqueline S.
To talk about Jacqueline S. So they kind of put us off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's okay. I mean, it sounds like the movie is still in pre-production, so
yeah.
Hopefully it'll move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And Seraphim is going to appear at Monsterpalooza, the annual celebration of classic and modern horror, fantasy and science fiction, and film literature, media, art, illustration, makeup, and more. So they will be there to showcase a large collection of Clive's prints and collectibles. The dates for the show are going to be April 22nd through the 24th, 2016, and it will be held at the Pasadena Convention Center. So if you live around the area or you can go there, you can go and probably you'll meet Mark Miller and Ben Mears and whoever else is interning there.
It's good to see that they're getting out there again and, you know, Clive's workout around, you know, the world. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and of course, Mark will be there with his own comic book stuff, too, I would imagine.
Yeah, he just finished, actually, I have to finish reading them, and I'll post a review up when I get if I have time. He did a comic book of the adaptation of
Steam Man?
Yeah, Steam Man, which I read the first two issues, and it was really good.
Yeah, and, I wanted to read that. I just
haven't. Artwork was great, and I just haven't finished it yet because I've gotten so into my creative writing class.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I miss creative writing classes. I kind of wish I had a reason to go back to those.
Writing, what I've learned, I mean, I don't mean to get on a tear or harp on this. Writing is hard.
Yeah.
You've got to fail a lot. It's not just you have ideas or one thing.
Yeah.
Actually putting them to paper and telling it in some kind of visual sense to where you want where you can make the reader cares. It's a craft. It's a definitely people like, you know, Clive Barker, Peter Atkins, and Paul Kane have, you know, I've got a lot of respect more for the authors now since after taking a class. Because
it seems like it takes a lot of self-confidence too.
Oh yeah, definitely. You got to, like I said, fail. And, you know, we have these workshops and, you know, in our class, and the other students just rip you to pieces.
That was the thing that's what I was going to say. That was the thing that I hated the most about.
You just have to kind of take it and look at it as a good thing.
I remember thinking, oh man, I can't wait until it's your turn. Because I remember one guy just ripped my story to pieces, and then he did this story about a guy that snuck a fake bomb through airport security. And it was like he had assembled a laptop and did everything on the laptop except for he made it so that the bomb wouldn't arm. So it was like he was just trying to prove a point that he could sneak this bomb through security or whatever. And so the teacher was like, oh, so you're saying the joke's on you, readers. And so we all just, because he was constantly criticizing everybody's story. So we all just jumped on him and ripped his story to pieces.
Should have told him that, hey, fear is the place you go to learn.
Yeah.
I know. That was a reference to our last commentary track.
Yeah. Deader. Touch the beast.
And so one of the best news that we have is the last one, is that Boom Studios is putting out Clive Barker's Nightbreed Archive. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be the old Nightbreed comics that are going to get reprinted. And they're going to be a huge couple of paperbacks, I think, or is it just one?
That would be awesome if it was just one.
It is just one.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah. That's great. And I don't think any of us expected to see anything more from Boom Studios, but this is great.
How many pages were a comic book of the Nightbreed?
I don't know.
It says here the collection will be 432 pages long.
Yay! Yeah.
That's got to be all of them.
You can probably kill someone with it.
Yeah. So it's going to have the Rawhead Rex stuff and the Jihad comics.
The Jihad, I don't know if that's going to be in there. Do you think so?
Well, I think Rob said in the story that they were.
Yeah, they're gonna be
there. Okay. I'm looking at Amazon. It says, completely remastered and collected together for the first time, Clive Barker's Nightbreed Archive is an ideal starting point for new readers and longtime Barker fans alike. And it says it's got the entire Nightbreed run as well as the crossover series with Hellraiser, which is pretty cool.
And you really need the Jihad comics because there's a lot of really important stuff that happens in there that you would be lost. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of characters that get killed and Boone gets transported inside the body of Baphomet.
Baphomet and Leviathan get mixed together.
Yeah.
So this is more of a satisfying maybe what the new comics kind of lacked. I've never read any of these, so.
Oh yeah, it's all about what happens after the. I mean, only the first four issues are about the movie, and then everything else after is just what happens after.
And that follows the first four issues. Follow the director's cut.
Because they only had the script to work from, and the movie wasn't out yet when they made it.
Oh, okay.
So like even Pelequin at first, he's like green and he had a tail.
Yeah, that's why he's drawn in the comic book.
Yeah, but then once the movie came out, they started sort of changing him.
But Narcisse is still alive in the comic books.
Oh well, he did. Narcisse got killed, and then he just mysteriously came back. And they kept saying in the letters that they were going to explain. You know, people would say, "Why is Narcisse alive? You killed him." And they said, "Oh, we'll explain that. Don't worry." But they never did.
There was no way to explain it.
they ran out of time.
So that's pretty sweet.
If this is good, that is.
Yeah.
If this does good, I hope they do the same thing with the old Hellraiser Marvel.
Yeah, well, they did release the old Hellraiser ones, but they were in Hellraiser Masterpiece, which is like they just were picking random stories and sticking them together in volumes.
Yeah,
and Amazon lists the date as being released in October 19,
2016. That's just in time for Halloween. Oh, and for Rob's birthday. So we know what you want, what you can get for your birthday.
It's on my list.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's a hardcover, so that makes it even better. It's
that's
a hardcover
really cool.
edition. $34.43 on Amazon.
Nice.
It's worth it.
Yeah, that's really cool. So we don't know if there's any new comics coming out from Boom Studios that are Clive Barker related, but we know that this is something especially for all those people that are having trouble collecting all the old issues. And I don't even have the epic, those epic ones. You know, what do you call it? Like epic number epic number one or whatever you call it that had Nightbreed in it.
Epic?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Epic 1 and 2.
Yes. Yeah, I don't have those. I only have the ones that have Nightbreed in the title.
I have them. There's a couple of good standalone stories in those. One of them is pretty nice. I have a art page from that, I think. But, yeah, they're probably going to be in here, too, because if they're going to put in Jihad, they're probably going to put in Epic 1 and 2 stories as well. And it's going to be cool. It's going to be a hardcover. Although you can find the whole run of Nightbreed on eBay. It's not too expensive. I mean, yeah. I think...
I bought them all for $20 at one time.
Wow.
Man, that's okay.
But that was probably like 4 years ago.
I saw a whole collection for like $62 and I got it.
Yeah.
Even though I already had some.
The cheapest I got somebody to go down was $40.
Well, and now, you know, with the director's cut and, you know, in the Nightbreed fever from the Cabal cut back then, it was different. Yeah. You know, before the Occupy Midian and everything, everything Nightbreed was pretty cheap. You could get the Nightbreed Chronicles for like $15.
Oh man, that's right. I wish I did.
Good times.
Yeah.
I need a copy of that, but it's always about $50.
Mm. Minimum. The Hellraiser Chronicles is still pretty accessible, though. It's usually like $13, $16. You can get the Nightbreed Chronicles on Amazon. But the Nightbreed one, no, that's much more expensive.
They should have made a sequel volume to Hellraiser Chronicles and just do the new Cenobites that are after Hellraiser 3.
Mm, yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
It was from Titan Books, I think, right?
Yeah.
Titan Books still exists.
Do they?
I think so, right?
Yeah, that would have been smart. I mean, it would have been kind of a nice thing because basically, the Cenobite designs are really all we have to say, you know, just to make those Hellraiser movies interesting.
Yeah, I know. I wish that they had a good photographer that would have taken pictures of all of those things, but I don't even know if those movies during production had, you know, any serious, like, photography done of the Cenobites makeup. I mean, I'm sure they had continuity photos and set photographers for, like, promotional stuff. But I wonder if there's, like, a good shot of, for example, the surgeon in Hellseeker that's not just a picture that Gary Tunnicliffe took in his workshop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these were done by... The Hellraiser Chronicles and the Nightbreed Chronicles were done by photographer Murray Close, who was working at the time, you know, on the set. And he was, you know, basically, I think Jeff Portis once said that the way that those pictures were being taken is they were working on the shop, then they were just rushing those monsters to the set. And on the way there, some of them would just pose in front of this scenery, and Murray Close would snap shots of them in different poses. And that's how they came up with the idea of making the book, because they had all these good shots of the monsters.
And then Clive Barker actually took the time to write all those backstories.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
Which is the one main thing that separates the Nightbreed Chronicles from the Hellraiser Chronicles.
Some really amazing backstories there, like Lyles Briggs' origin and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some of them are more like almost poetic than, especially Scorch. For example, his backstory is this convoluted story about him being part of a menagerie that there was a collector of like rare skins or whatever. It's been years since I've read this, but it was very, very nice, mm-hmm. very, very poetic. And I really loved
Mexico's
the insight.
Backstory?
Mexico was a guy, I think he didn't speak. He only spoke more with the hands in his neck.
Oh, okay.
And he was considered to be a very seductive lover.
Yeah, he kind of has that kind of vibe to him.
Yeah.
Something that's very...
Mexico was a playa.
He's in... Mexico was in that Nightbreed the Action game. There were two pictures of him in the same screenshot.
He has
in the background.
So I guess they just were like... We'll just use a shot of this monster for
you know,
try to
it's
sell.
It's a cool monster. Mexico is a really cool monster with the neck hands and mm-hmm. stuff. And
Really
in the old DVD, he was like stuck in the back. We could barely see him. But now in the Blu-ray, it kind of pops better. Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as you want to talk about site news, we've had
some reviews. So, what's coming up on the site are actually things that we've already done. I think when we originally made these notes, that there were things that were upcoming, but most of these are done now. Jose, you did another review of Voices of the Damned by Barbie mm-hmm. Wilde.
I did, and I put that one on Amazon as well. And it's like I said, it was a great pleasure to have her on the episode, and it was great that we got to read all those stories, especially like Polyp. Mm-hmm. Which is a really cool story. It's a really splatterpunk, gory story.
Yeah, it really is.
It was really fun.
So
I decided to put up the review. Should have done it before, but, you know, we had the episode up, which was, you know, also our way of promoting it. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that means it's my turn next. And Jose, you also did, you also put up a Hellraiser prequel treatment. So this was something that you wrote a few years back. Right, yeah. That was your idea for a Hellraiser prequel.
Yeah, I think I did this in just an afternoon.
Liked it. It's very good.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, a lot of the listeners really.
There was some good feedback from people, so I appreciate that. It was just I had this on my email, and I found it, and I was like, you know, I wrote that thing. I wonder if I have it on my email or something. And I did, so I just tried updating it a little bit, correcting a few typos, and just put it up. Hey, who'd have known? I mean, at the time when a new Hellraiser is coming out, and there were people who were saying, hey, I like the story. And I was like, thank you.
You'll have to put a watermark on it so it doesn't get stolen by the Weinstein Company.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. I wish they would.
Yeah. They'd actually say, make it good.
Yeah. Nope, they'll just take another script that they have that's unrelated.
I just like that's the Cenobite character you have. It's like, what was it? Ryan asked a question about it on the site. I was wondering if you did a drawing of it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Did you kind of drawings for the Cenobites that you had
created? I guess I didn't. I did Cenobite drawings for another story that I did once on the Hellbound web. It was a contest to what would be like your idea for Hellraiser 9. And this was before Revelations came out. And I did make two Cenobite designs that I have on my DeviantArt page. I think one of them was called MAGA, and I forgot the name of the other one. But I could add the link to the show notes. I think I have the treatment for like my idea for the Hellraiser 9 as the text caption on the images on DeviantArt. So yeah, we'll add that to the show notes. But for this one, I didn't really. It was just meant to be like a very thin, very young looking Cenobite with like an apron and just, you know, very deep set eyes and stuff like that.
I was thinking of that Chinese one, the Chinese Cenobite from your story.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, based on Chinese folklore. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I didn't design anything for this because I just took this off of Chinese folklore.
Gotcha.
You did your Nightbreed action game review, Ryan.
Yeah. So that was fun. I actually put it off for a long time because I was nervous about playing this game. And also my computer hard drive is filled up. So it gives me a lot of grief when I'm trying to do projects and stuff. But it was a lot of fun, and I kind of did it in a weird reverse way where I played the game and recorded all the footage of playing all the way through the game, and then I made an audio review, kind of like the way we do our podcasts, and then I picked clips and matched them up to what I was, matched them up to what I was saying in the review.
That
it worked really well. It was funny.
I could see you were getting frustrated in some parts with with Boone. Why'd they make you? All you did was a lot of kicking and
yeah, that's right.
Like that.
So punching didn't do anything, but if you kick, then kicking did a ton of damage. And punching, you could literally punch the same guy for 10 minutes straight before he finally would die.
Remember you did that in the video.
And I actually have like 15 minutes of footage of just punching a guy. But I thought that would be pretty boring for people to see, so I just had to cut it down a whole bunch. But and then the other thing that I discovered, you know, after a lot of trial and error, is one of the ways of getting around in the game is getting punched by an enemy, and so you fly across a chasm. So before that, I thought you were just supposed to run and jump across, and I could never make it. And it's like, what is the deal with this game? I can't get any further. And then if I would go back and forth until a certain enemy would spawn, and then he would punch me and make me fly across the chasm. You know, just like what happens in the movie.
Yeah.
But you gave us. That's a weird mechanic to put in the game. I expect people. You know, I hate it when games would change, like, the rules, like, in certain levels, they would be like, okay, now you gotta, like Prince of Persia, there's a part where you have to do a leap of faith if you want to move from level 6 to 7 or something.
Are you talking about the old Prince of Persia or the remake?
No, the old Prince of Persia, the game.
I remember that. Yeah, that leap of faith.
Yeah, and it's like, to that point, you know that every time you fall off a chasm, you're going to die. And so when they change the rules...
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of a twist, and when you realize what they're doing, it's kind of fun. But it doesn't feel right to do that.
No.
When you have to.
Yeah, you're trained to avoid getting beat up by monsters, and mm-hmm. to do it on purpose so that you can fly across the room.
Yeah.
That's
pretty good.
When you meet up with Cabal you meet up with Baphomet and he turns you into Cabal and he says, okay, now you're Cabal, you're going to be a lot stronger and you're going to be able to control the Nightbreed. He lied. You do not control the Nightbreed.
He tells you to unleash the Berserkers and the Berserkers go after you?
Actually, you don't ever get to see the Berserkers at all. You go and open the door, and then, like, a text box appears that says, you've released the Berserkers. All right, now go back to the surface.
Oh, okay.
I really like that teaser video that you posted where you showed how Baphomet summons you. It's like, I, Baphomet, summon you.
He talks in Elizabethan English, so he's like, I, Baphomet, summon thee.
Yeah.
I also like the opening titles with you and Joey. That was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, that's kind of a... it's like I can't work on something without him wanting to be involved somehow.
That's
so
cool,
it's like if I work him into it, then everybody's happy.
I've always enjoyed seeing the stuff, that little... what was that? That video you showed me and Jose, where it was like a... It's like a dance video?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He wanted to make...
It's a combination of a war song and...
Yeah, he wanted to do a video. He wanted to show everybody how he falls down, and so it's like I made it into a workout video.
Yeah.
And since I've been on a reality show, I cut it the way they do reality shows.
Yeah.
Buying Alaska, people. Go see it.
Yeah, it was amazing because, I mean, it makes total sense when you're there to see how they do those, that they do all the interviews separately from filming all of the, you know, so they just, you know, knock it all out at once. And okay, so tell me how you feel about seeing the outhouse. Now tell me, what did you think when you saw the kitchen? Now tell me, and they do that constantly, but then they cut those in, you know, into the progress
with footage of the bathroom, and then they get to the guy talking about the bathroom. It's like, I've been to a lot of conventions, comic book conventions, and comic art conventions and stuff. And I've seen how sometimes they do like interviews with people. It's like they will be talking to the person interviewing them, and the camera is trained on the person. And then afterwards, they say, all right, thank you for your time. And they go to a corner of the convention, and they go like, okay, now we're going to record the questions. And they turn the camera on to the reporter, and the reporter pretends like he's asking the questions to the person.
Because they only have one camera.
Right. And then I was like, oh, wow, I never realized that that's what they do sometimes. And,
wow.
There you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of fakery.
So there's no fakery in my Jericho playthrough, though. I know I promised it was going to be a weekly series, and I already recorded episode number 3, and I've been recording episode number 4. So Monday, expect a new episode, and it's my pure blind, almost blind, because I finished the game before, but I hardly remember anything about Jericho. So, but what I can tell you is that playing this game, I come to realize that it's really boring in some parts because the enemies are all like bullet sponges.
Mm.
And it's basically like move from point A to point B, but in between point A and point B are going to be a series of checkpoints. And in between each checkpoint, it's pretty much going to be a stretch of the path where monsters are going to spawn for a certain amount of time, and you're all going to be shooting at the monsters until they stop spawning. And then you can move on to the next point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember this game being more fun than it is, but I don't want to be like the downer or the pessimist. I'm having fun with the game. The story is amazing. The graphics are pretty good. And I think this – I can really see the brilliance of Clive Barker's story on this game. And
that's what carried me through the game when I played it. I mean, I played it on every difficulty level.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mainly because it's like I just wanted to keep experiencing the atmosphere and the story. Oh, and yeah, and I didn't think the gameplay was super fun, but
you played it on the Xbox 360.
Yeah,
I'm playing
that
on
the best
on
way
PC.
To play it, right?
I don't know about that. I mean, I would imagine probably the graphics are a little better on the PC.
Mm. But I'm guessing the gameplay is the same. And so
yeah.
There's just parts where it's hard to understand what the game wants you to do. And mm-hmm. I know that's been like – that was like something that damaged the gameplay for some players. Like the whole thing where you have to sometimes you switch from one teammate to the other so you can use their power of telekinetics to possess another monster that's on top of a wall – so he can walk over to this lever and pull it so it can open a door for you guys to go through. And it's like if you don't play around with the mechanics of the game, with the jumping from teammate to teammate,
yeah.
you're going to have a hard time passing some levels because
yeah.
some of them are you're not going to go any further unless you do what the game expects you to do.
But experience teaches you that being the big guy with the firearm and the machine gun is – the easiest and, you know, the way to get through all the enemies. So you pretty much just want to stay with him until
Delgado.
You, yeah, and yeah, until you find out that you need to do something different.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. That's the one I finished the game with.
Yeah. Sometimes you need the sniper lady, but.
And one time you need Cole, which is the communications lady, because she can throw grenades into the foxhole shooters that are. Shooting at you. So everyone gets to do something. But sometimes it's hard to understand what the game wants you to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm doing the game. I don't know how many episodes it's going to be because this game would be probably around 6-7 hours of gameplay. And so I'm trying to make the episodes be like half an hour long.
Mm.
So maybe 14-15 episodes and we'll be done with Jericho. And then we can move on to Undying, which I'm also playing right now.
It felt like the game came out too early because it seemed like it should have been a 4-player game, but it's really you've got 4 characters and you just switch between them all the time.
You mean it was like ahead of its time?
Yeah, you know, like Left 4 Dead, right? It's just like Left 4 Dead where you've got 4 different kinds of characters and except they're all NPCs and they drive you crazy.
Yeah.
And you keep shooting members of your own team.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a big problem with those kind of games.
Yeah.
Was there a multiplayer for this? Do you remember?
No.
No, okay. Sadly. No. I was hoping there should have been, though.
No, and I think at that time, every game had like a multiplayer version, even if nobody ever used it. It just felt like something you had to do. And I think that was something that hurt the sales on it.
Yeah, because you can get this game very cheap. It's
even like the Land of the Dead video game had a multiplayer, mode.
I guess it would have implied having like dedicated servers for the game, and maybe that was not comprehended in the budget. I guess.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's really a story-driven game, and that's the way it should have been. You know, should have been advertised, but maybe they only needed one character. I don't know.
And the maps are not that fantastic. I mean, the maps are pretty much, it's very linear, very much on rails.
Yeah.
And all you get is ruins. And the ruins, you know, they change a little bit from level to level. But ultimately, they're always kind of built the same way, and it's always the same kind of winding path through the ruins.
Sometimes the weird, that weird stretched out skin with the blood on it is pretty creepy.
That is pretty creepy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of creepy things, you did a review for Snow, for Paul Kane's Snow, right, Rob?
Yeah, that was a very interesting take on the Snow White legend.
Yeah.
He really, you know, really did a good job of that. It's a very short novella, maybe about 60 pages. But what's cool about his take on it is, like, he actually makes, he does all these, like, little nods to the original story and puts them into a modern, puts a modern twist on them that, that really works. Because I usually, I don't like when stories, like, if you look at, like, Shakespeare stories, like if you look at a movie like O, or the new Romeo and Juliet they did with Claire Danes, and I didn't really care.
Or what about the one that had Leonardo DiCaprio and they had guns?
That's the one.
Yeah,
I don't care when, for those kind of updates. But Paul does these cool, like, you know, twists of his that makes you heck. I mean, I actually, in some ways, enjoyed his version better than the original. It was a lot darker, and, you know, I would hope, I did an interview, he answered some questions that I just had about the book, too, and, you know, I don't think he has any plans at the moment to, you know, to do a sequel or anything, but I think he could do a series of stories based around this world.
That'd be amazing. He did one with Red Riding Hood and Blood Red.
Yeah. Yeah, which is really cool because, you know, I mean, other than, I guess you learn from the title what it's going to be, but really you're reading, at least with Blood Red, you're kind of reading through it and you're going, hey, this is kind of a Red Riding Hood story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you sort of figure it out as you go along. I mean, even though you probably know that already just from the title, but I don't know, it's hard to explain. But I think it's subtle, and it becomes more and more clear as you get through this story.
And he does a good job of making the villain in Snow more interesting and not just, you know, an archetype, how they say it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not just an archetype character, and she actually has a lot more depth that you actually kind of feel sorry for her, too.
Are there seven dwarves?
Ruth. Huh?
Are there seven dwarves?
You got to read the book to find that out.
There you go.
Yeah, if you want me to tell you after.
That's okay. No, you just reminded me. What was that old TV commercial where they with the mysteries of the unknown or something like that? The books, and somebody would ask a question. They go, "You got to read the book."
I don't know.
I can't remember. It was from the 80s.
Yeah, but you did a cool mini interview with Paul Kane, so I would ask our listeners to go read that.
I'll read the book.
Yeah, and you know, read the interview with Paul Kane because you posted it on February 29th, and it's really, really informative. You talk about the Brothers Grimm, and you know the stories that we hear when we're growing up. And you talk about Snow. So, yeah, that's a pretty cool one. And there's a last news item I would like to bring up. That is that Terry Cat figurines have been announced.
Oh, yeah.
On the Real Clive Barker store.
Yeah, that was just from today as we're recording this.
Yeah. So the sculptures are pretty cool.
And they're rough form. So I don't know if it'll be like a limited edition thing or what, but I would hope not. I would like to. I mean, I've never read all the way through Abra, but you know those creatures. I've always seen them through in the paintings that Clive's mm-hmm. done,
and T-shirts Abra and stuff.
Yeah, the Terry Cats are great.
They're being sculpted by artist Matthew Levin, and they're pretty cool looking. They look just like the paintings that Clive Barker did, except that they haven't been painted yet. I'm guessing once they paint these things, they're going to come to life.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I hope they're not too expensive. I'm interested.
That's what I don't want them to cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
They look like little beanie sculptures, though. They look pretty cool from the picture that the Clive Barker page posted. So let's wait and see what these are going to be priced at. And I'm sure that if you love Aberrat, you'll love to have the Terry Cats in your living room.
And we briefly mentioned this before, but we also had a Hellraiser Deader commentary that we just recently finished. So that's in the podcast feed. You might have seen that on show up on your feed if you subscribe, or you can go to the website and find it there too. So you can kind of sync up your Hellraiser Deader and get tortured along with us.
I was gonna mention to you, Jose, you cut out like 30 minutes of the movie, and I was going to say I watched that, and it played a lot better.
Oh, okay. That was,
I actually enjoyed that version a lot better.
I know.
Your experiment worked.
I mentioned that during the commentary that years ago when I saw this for the first time, I decided, hey, what if I cut some of these parts out, all these like fake dream sequences? And yeah, I did that, and I showed it to you guys, and I don't know if I should like share it on the blog or something.
I wouldn't do that. Yeah. But
so it's like an hour long version of the movie without all.
Yeah, 51 minutes.
Yeah, 51 minutes. But
without the fake outs and the dream within a dream and a flashback inside of a dream.
I mean, the whole third act is just chopped up. I mean, but for rightly so.
Yeah,
I thought that was the edits you made were good edits.
Yeah, I took out some things that annoy me about the movie, and you know. I like the idea of fan edits. I'm not a purist that says, oh, no, only the director's vision should be. I like to see people mess around with movies a little bit because sometimes it turns out to be
interesting.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, why not?
And sometimes they're just fun to watch. And somebody did like a Jaws fan edit, and they made it into like a Grindhouse movie, and they were playing like Stooges punk music, you know?
Oh, cool.
Without just through it, and it just the way they put all these like kind of like you saw the movie what was called Grindhouse by Quentin Tarantino, and they did all these like you know those scratches to the movie, and it was really cool.
Yeah, and missing scenes.
Well, I've seen a fan edit of The Empire Strikes Back, for example, that's made as if it was a Quentin Tarantino movie. So they changed all the music in the movie. They changed, like...
the structure of the story?
Yeah, the structure of the story, the way that the shots merge into each other. And they slow motion a few scenes here and there, and they put, like, Western Spaghetti music playing. And it's interesting. It's done in a really cool way. I've also seen another Star Wars fan edit that replaced all of Darth Vader's lines with other lines from James Earl Jones' older movies. It just becomes so funny. Yeah.
Like Conan the Barbarian?
Yeah, stuff like that. Like when he walks into the ship at the beginning after the rebel soldiers were finding the stormtroopers, he comes in and he starts counting like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I love the work you guys do. It's amazing. And it's like a line from James Earl Jones from another movie. And it's really funny. And he also replaces Yoda's voice with, like, some Japanese dude that we don't even know what he's talking about.
The Riddle of Steel.
Yeah.
You know what
I forgot what it's called. It's the Star Wars Grindhouse. I don't know. But if you Google that, you might find it. So, yeah, give it a try.
You should replace Pinhead lines with James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
With lines from Field of Dreams. Mm-hmm. People will come, right?
If you build it, they will come. Yeah. Looking at Leviathan.
That'd be interesting to replace Dr. Chouinard's lines with lines from, like, Layer Cake, where... have you seen Layer Cake? It's a movie with Ken Cranham.
No.
It's like one of those British mobster movies... Like Richie. What's the name of the Madonna's ex-husband? Guy Ritchie. Yeah, Guy Ritchie. Imagine like those movies that Guy Ritchie used to make. Layer Cake is one of those English mobster films.
Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah, like that. Like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Yeah. So imagine like replacing like Chouinard's lines with some lines by Ken Cranham from like. Pretending to be a mobster from, like, England.
I mean,
Yeah.
It's a little easier with Darth Vader because you don't see his face.
That's true. That's true. Bad idea. Okay, well, if we sound a little tired and loopy and ranty, it's because for me it's like 1:30 in the morning. For Rob, it's 3:30 in the morning.
Oh, man.
And for you, it's like 11 o'clock.
Yeah, 11:30.
So apologies for me being a little tired. You got
love that Alaskan
time. Yeah. Yeah, well, it makes it tough on everybody else, but no, it's hard on me if we do early morning.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. It's cool. I'm glad we got to do the episode because I like talking to you guys.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, and we all have different perspectives on like the Hellraiser movie.
We introduced a lot of stuff that was off topic in this episode, but it kind of works, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay.
I will be writing an article on Hellraiser Judgment, so look forward to that in the next week or so.
Oh, putting everything together?
Yeah, I've got it all outlined. I just got to write it. So,
yay.
So,
yeah.
I'll just get my deeper introspective on.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, you read, you know, whenever we read these articles, they always have to start out by, no, this isn't the Hellraiser that Clive Barker talked about doing a remake of, and here's the history of the Weinsteins and Hellraiser movies, and so you got to read like four paragraphs down before you get to the news a lot of the time.
Yeah, that is true. But I'm gonna have to get off here. I'm getting ready to fall asleep.
Okay. Yeah, we promised we would yell randomly, and we didn't do that.
And you didn't. You didn't have to, luckily.
Okay, here we go. Screw sleep!
Screw sleep.
That was a Heather Langenkamp callback.
Thank you. Now I'm awake again.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
It's time to watch Saint Sinner. What?
Yeah. Oh, God.
All right, guys.
That's our next commentary. Yeah. Well, y'all take care.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
The Clive Barker Podcast, or BarkerCast, is an independent editorial fan site and podcast that is not affiliated with or under contract by Clive Barker or Seraphim Films. This podcast and site are a labor of love by the fans for the fans. News, features, and show notes for this episode can be found at www.clivebarkercast.com. Go to iTunes and please leave us a review. Reviews really help us get the word out about Clive Barker. You can also find us on Podomatic, Xbox Music Store, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, DoubleTwist, BlackBerry, and Pocket Cast. We have a Facebook page, so come on and like our Facebook page and join the Occupy Media group for lots of discussion about Nightbreed and other Clive Barker stuff. On Twitter, we're at BarkerCast and at Occupy Midian. Opening theme by Mark Buckle.